Welcome to the Full Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 5:48 Irish Summer Time. Today is August 15th, and of course, today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. Well, this has been quite a week, and there are a number of events to cover, which and I'll attempt to do that over the course of this audio. The first, of course, is that oil continues to remains in this medium-term correction, and it's extending its to new lows for this reaction in here today, down another almost $3 at 112.12, and that is a negative headwind for just about everything else in the commodity asset class. When I opened the screens this morning, I saw that silver was down around $12.30 or 40, which was an enormous downside move. In the past, silver has had these very large downward reactions, which have generally been climactic and have marked lows of at least medium-term significance. How long silver then takes to go back to build support and move back up towards its highs and move up to new high ground over the last 5 years has been in the order of between 1 and 2 years. Now, silver fell from its high and then consolidated for approximately 4 to 5 months and then fell again this week. It has rallied significantly off its lows in here today, and that is a bullish factor in the very short term. Of course, if some of the negative some of the negative factors that have helped to drag down the precious metals this week remain in place next week, well, then we could see some of these precious metals continuing in these downtrends. However, I think that there is a better than 50-50 chance that this is climactic activity and that we have seen at least a low of short-term significance and potentially medium-term significance in silver in here today. I think the evidence is also there potentially for gold, but silver has probably got the better chart. I opened a long and I recklessly, I think, put in a stop that was too tight, allowing my emotions to get the better of me in that one, as opposed to my analytical edge. And I really should have had a stop either considerably further away or not had a stop at all if I do actually believe that this is towards the bottom of this reaction. But I was feeling a bit risk averse having opened the long in the first place in the absence of any upward dynamic. Of course, an upward dynamic in any of these precious metals from these overextended levels would really be a quite good confirmation that we have seen an important low, and calling this climactic activity is, in the first place, it's anticipating the market, which is, I suppose, what we attempt to do, but of course, it's also high risk. A prudent investor would be waiting for that upward dynamic because there is plenty of potential upside given the amount that or the extent of the fall that these precious metals have had in the last week. Of course, platinum continues to lead on the downside, and it was down in excess of $100 in here today, down to 1384, and actually considerably below that, almost $40 below that at the low of the day. So we do see that precious metals have rallied off their lows, and this is an important juncture. It will be very interesting to see what happens next week. That will certainly, almost certainly, be a very active sector in the next week and potentially the next month or two, depending on what we see. The rest of the commodity complex has also come under selling pressure. Soybeans was down 66. Now, of course, soybeans was limit up at one point this week, but down 66, its limit for the day is 70, so it's almost limit down in here today, and corn is almost limit down as well. So we're seeing pretty concerted selling pressure right across the commodity complex. The industrial metals have also come under a little bit of selling pressure, although copper, which is one that a lot of people are watching, has been quite steady. So what is the background behind all of this? Well, we've had a fantastic rally from the first part of this year up to those May highs, and we're now in medium-term correction territory for the vast majority of commodity markets. This is an enormously traumatic time for people who are holding long-term investment positions in this sector, because they have experienced profit erosion, and profit erosion is extremely traumatic. And there is a quite intense temptation to sell at this juncture, particularly when we see markets accelerating on the downside. But acceleration is an ending signal, but it's of undetermined duration. That is a saw from the chart seminar, and it is apt in this particular scenario because we have had a significant sell-off, particularly in precious metals, but right across the commodity complex, and it is accelerating. It tells us that we are entering the end game for this particular part of this sell-off. For investors that are not willing to sit through what is potentially going to be a rather lengthy correction and could be in the order of a year, potentially even longer than that, and of course nobody knows at this stage. But for investors who are unwilling to hang around for that long, this is probably not the right time to sell, because there is potential for a bounce to occur in the not too distant future. But for investors who are looking to enter the market, well, we are swiftly approaching a potential buying opportunity. But because of the amount of technical damage that has been done to these uptrends, we have to be patient. Anyone who's buying in here today can probably expect the commodity complex to underperform for a while longer. So it's going to be tomorrow's jam, to coin a phrase. And while there is potentially a buying opportunity coming our way, they're probably going to have to wait a while before we can see a lot of these commodity markets pushing up and making new highs. As far as I can see, there aren't any commodities at the moment making new highs, which is certainly an indication that the entire sector is in a period of deleveraging. But looking at the wider picture, the reasons to be long of commodities over the long term are still very much intact. Infrastructure development across the Asian region, and indeed across the world, is being prioritized by governments, either because in the West, particularly in the US and in Europe, we have aging infrastructure, and there is also the need for investment there. And of course, in the big population centers of the world, they have these burgeoning young populations, which are quickly reaching the age in which they will need higher education, jobs, and accommodation. That requires an enormous amount of infrastructure development. And of course, these young people aspire to the standard of living which we take for granted in the West. And they don't see any reason why they shouldn't have that standard of living, and they're going to work, and they're certainly not afraid of working. They're going to work towards attaining that goal for themselves. That is a bellwether for commodities over the very long term, because per capita use of commodities across the Asian region in particular is rising at an inexorable rate. Now, China is one of the bigger consumers of commodities in the world right now, but per capita consumption of key commodities is still relatively low. It's certainly considerably higher than it was 5 years ago, but compared to the consumption that we enjoy in the West, they're lagging behind considerably. And that is going to be one of the major drivers for this commodity market. India, which is also on a long-term growth projection, is only just starting to build infrastructure. And while that is being slowed by the vibrant democracy that they enjoy in India, it is certainly something that is going to happen sooner or later. And when per capita consumption of commodities grows even to the rate that it is enjoyed by the Chinese in India, then we're going to have, oh, sorry, by the Chinese, then India is going to have is going to be a major consumer of commodities and is going to help to drive this bull market forward. Accessing this market is obviously easily done through the commodities themselves, but also through commodity exporting countries such as Canada and Australia. Of course, a number of the commodity exporting countries did particularly well in the first half of this year, and their relative outperformance was absolutely stunning, and it was the best of all possible worlds. However, they have now succumbed, along with commodities, to the perfect storm that we've so often talked about in Comment of the Day, where we have inflationary pressures, we have slowing GDP growth, and we have the falling commodity prices. They're also helping to pull down the relative performance of some of the commodity exporting countries, and that is likely to continue as long as commodities as an asset class underperform. But stock markets generally have encountered support or found support in mid-July, and the majority of them have rallied rather well up to the present juncture, where a number have run out of steam to an extent. Over the long term, we would expect the Asian region to perform best in terms of absolute performance for a number of reasons. One, of course, is because emerging markets are more volatile. When they move on the upside, they generally move more on the upside than developed markets. But also the Asian region is the center for GDP growth, and it's also improving in terms of governance, which is something that we can't say for ourselves in the West, particularly since a number of countries have experienced this or experiencing the negative effects of the current credit crunch, which continues to beleaguer investor sentiment and the stock markets generally. We're currently in a very uncertain time because sentiment is remarkably bearish, and there is a widely held perception that we're going to see markets break through the July lows and move and further extend their medium-term downtrends. There is no conclusive evidence yet that stock markets have bottomed. And of course, over the last 5 years, we've had a remarkably strong, consistent, rhythmic uptrend, which was broken in October. And we've seen markets falling generally for about the last year. So there is certainly reason to be anxious about the direction of markets, and technical damage has been done to those consistent uptrends. That's an indication that at the very least, if support is found and markets can rally somewhat, that we're going to have to go through a support building phase. And that could also be potentially lengthy for the wider stock markets. What we can see is that the consumer sector, particularly companies that benefit from weaker consumer spending, such as Walmart, where people are looking for bargains, and the pharmaceutical sector, so defensive stocks, are doing rather well in this scenario. This week, we released the high-low filter for the chart library, and subscribers or anyone with access to the, well, hopefully only subscribers have access to the website, to the chart library, can scan through thousands of different stocks to find those that are making new 6 month or 12 month highs, or indeed all time highs. And that I did a scan or a filter of the S&P 500 this week and found that companies that are doing best are generally in the healthcare or pharma sectors in particular, or in the biotech sectors, and they're doing particularly well. The Nasdaq was the only of the main indices in the US that did not break the January and March lows, and it has rallied rather well since the middle of July. And technology shares generally have performed better than other shares in the US region. One of the reasons for that is because they're global companies. And while there is constant talk of recession in the US and recession in the UK, a potential recession in the UK and recession in Ireland, and housing slumps right across the US and in many countries in the in the EU, the Asian region continues to set the pace in terms of GDP growth. There's no risk of a recession in that area. Particularly in the main markets that interest us, which are China and India, along with some of the developed markets such as Singapore and Hong Kong and Taiwan. So that is an area that will benefit over the longer term from investors chasing yield, or sorry, chasing returns. And there is also, I suppose, at the moment, the continued threat of the Wall Street leash effect, because Wall Street is obviously the biggest market, and global sentiment is very much tied to how the Wall Street indices are performing. But this too will pass, and we are also now starting to see that there is a China leash effect. It's not nearly as powerful as the Wall Street leash effect, but that is really only a matter of time. And 20 years from now, we could easily be seeing that markets are more mirroring what is happening in some of the larger Asian economies than what is happening in the US because of the transfer of capital to that area. But for the moment, because Wall Street is still very uncertain, and because there is no conclusive bottom having been found by markets, although there is certainly a short-term bottom having been found by markets, then the Asian region continues to underperform. I can't think of a ready reason why that is the case, other than the fact that international investors are really quite nervous, and we continue to see deleveraging across a number of asset classes. I think there is a large number of investors with a lot of cash on the sidelines waiting for some sort of conclusive signal that we are getting the all clear from this credit crisis. One thing that the credit crisis has certainly done has helped to lengthen the credit cycle. And in terms of government bond yields, we've seen that government bond yields, particularly in the US, bottomed in 2003 and remain in this rather lengthy base formation. The recent retest of those lows came very close to setting new lows, but actually didn't get that far because rates haven't fallen as much on this occasion in the US as they did following the Nasdaq bust and 9/11. So the amount of liquidity that has been pumped into the market over the last year, particularly, is quite extraordinary. And the bailing out of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which has added to the US national debt quite considerably, is really a massive injection of liquidity into markets. That liquidity is being absorbed by banks but not being re-lent out. So the money markets remain rather frozen, and there is no trust in the banking system, where we continue to see banks writing negative reports about each other. And of course, if they are betting against the performance of their comrades, then they're certainly not going to be lending vigorously to one another, which would certainly help to get liquidity flowing once more. So we continue in a rather nervous environment, and there remains rumors that we're going to see another one of the large banks going under. Of course, the Fed has more or less drawn a line under that. And if they were willing to bail out Bear Stearns, then there is a strong likelihood that they may then also bail out Lehman Brothers if it comes to that. So there is a lot of nervousness out there, but there is also a strong will at the central bank level to put a floor under markets. And while we remain in very nervous environment, and while there is still the potential for markets to break those mid-July lows and extend these downtrends, at the moment we see that banks have rallied rather well, so have stock markets, and banks have led on the downside, led on the upside on the way up in between 2003 and 2008, and they're not breaking down. So while sentiment remains extremely bearish, the environment for equities is slowly changing for the better. But it's going to take time, and there will be a lengthy convalescence period. Because of the way we are seeing markets at the moment, this is a trying time because there is no asset class that is performing particularly well. Government bonds have performed reasonably well over the last month. They haven't gone anywhere. The dollar is one of the strongest trending moves at the moment, but I find it very difficult to make a good argument for the strength of the dollar. And I think there has been rumors and some emerging evidence that we've seen an intervention on behalf of central banks to support the dollar, and that was potentially in line with the Saudis allowing more oil into the market to help bring down prices. So there is potential for the dollar rally to go a bit further, and it certainly rallied further in here today. But it is looking overextended, and that being the case, and I can't, as I said, I can't think of a strong bullish reason why the dollar should be rallying. And in the past, and with other short covering rallies will go as long as the short covering lasts. And then there is a question asked as to what has really changed. And I can't think of anything that has really changed in favor of the dollar, which sets us up for the potential for the dollar to come back somewhat and potentially even touch its lows. There's no evidence of that just yet, and it would really need a downward dynamic to check the momentum. But when we see that, that's going to also probably coincide with a low being found by the commodity complex. Looking at the longer term themes, well, the dollar is a congenitally weak currency when you look at it from a macro perspective. And this move that we've seen, which has seen the dollar index break above 74, and it's currently at 77, has been a very impressive rally, which has no sign just yet of ending. But when it does end, then we are going to see a rather good buying opportunity for some of these commodity currencies, and particularly those that are high yielding, such as the Brazilian real. Also, in the Asian region, the Chinese have slowly been allowing their yuan to appreciate, and because other Asian countries are competing strongly with China on the manufacturing front, that will also allow them, and has allowed them, to allow their currencies to appreciate as well. The Singapore dollar has weakened considerably against the US dollar, over the last few weeks, and that is one of the most consistent uptrends for any currency. So that will be one to watch, I suspect, when the dollar starts to lose consistency against some of these currencies, because that could easily be one of the ones to strengthen first. But over the long term, because Asian countries are slowly allowing their currencies to appreciate, and a number of those currencies are significantly below the levels they were at before the Asian financial crisis, there is considerable room for them to appreciate before they even reach those levels. That is a bonus for anyone investing over the long term in those countries, because with the highest GDP growth rates in the world, improving governance and steady stock markets, well, increasingly steady stock markets, as well as the benefit of having a stronger currency, that is a strong argument for being overweight of the Asian region. We've often talked about the wobbly West versus the enterprising East, and the West needs to come up with a new way of making money, and it needs to tackle some of the issues that surround the deficits that so many countries are running, and there's going to have to be some sort of consolidation and rationalization following the busting of housing bubbles. They don't have those problems in Asia. There's certainly the liquidity problem that the credit crisis has sparked, and there has been the desertion of the region by institutional investors. But I suspect that that is only going to be linked to the very worst of the credit crisis, and when the banking sector eventually weathers this storm, and it could be into next year before investors can have any kind of confidence that the number of write-downs has actually reached its end, then there is a good chance that a lot of the money that had been flowing into Western markets will then once more be flowing into Asia, because it has by far the better growth theme. And with that thought, I will leave you for the weekend, but thank you very much for your time.